did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Oh, baby, it might seem like
they had some good face in the end was fairly good.
I thought it was good. I just didn't think it was great. I don't know. It's just, it was... Like, I'm glad I rented it. But.
Right. Glad I didn't pay $10 to go see it, though.
Yeah. It didn't suck. The acting, everything was good. It's just, there wasn't anything really.
The last time you were on the show, was Dark Knight Rises just out? Is that the conversation that we had?
Do you want a drink or just water?
Just water. Cool. Okay. Thanks.
I think that was...
We had a conversation regarding that. I don't remember if the Dark Knight... When did the Dark Knight Rise... Tell me the month, I remember.
July. It seems like that was a July movie.
Oh. It was a year I don't ago. Think so. That's when I was here?
Maybe.
No.
It wasn't a year ago.
No, that was the last time he was... That was when he first did the show.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I think Dark Knight... No. I think Dark Knight Rises had already been out a while.
Yeah, because we were talking about...
We were talking about... You liked...
I was telling you my theory of why Dark Knight sucked.
Is that the one with... what's his name? The guy that died?
Ledger, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that I liked. And you're like... And you're like...
It's still saying that guy that died.
I can't...
Cheryl would say.
That's what I thought.
Well, I am sitting next to Cheryl, so her energy is...
It's just sucking the brain
that's
out
right.
of you. Right, so... You might have got a little contact high.
So, hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 50 of Breaking In. It's our 50th show, 50 Woo! Weeks in a row. So we thought it would be fun to bring back one of our more popular guests and one of our first, Sammy Montana from Anarchy Management.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We're going to do kind of a short show with Sammy.
Oh, there's a tongue twister.
And then we're going to do, we've invited Sammy to do a, we've affectionately called the Tearing It Up with Manny and Cheryl.
Yeah.
So it's basically cool. Ripping on movies. Ripping on shitty movies.
Movies we like, but...
We're gonna dive into the age-old question of who shot Bobby Lupo?
And it will be solved here today, people.
So what I thought would be kind of fun is I thought we would do like a rapid fire question, Q&A with Sammy, and bring up the five most popular questions that always comes up. And so you know what they are.
Yes.
I don't think we've ever actually narrowed it down to one. Like, boom,
Manny's
boom,
actually doing a conglomerate of
webinars for Final Draft,
where they've interviewed writers, and it's like top questions of what you ask a writer.
Yeah.
So it's literally five people who same question and five people's answers. Boom, boom, boom.
Cool. Very cool.
Okay, so question one, which you've already answered, so I want you to keep it very short.
Who shot Bobby Lupo?
Yeah, who did?
No.
Yes, that's what all writers want.
Is this thing on? Hello? It's a microphone. Wow.
And you're yelling into it.
Sorry. I'm used to the other one.
He's the one who leans forward. We need to move. Remember we said.
Oh, yeah. This one catches it from quite a...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
You don't.
So this sense is okay?
I can just sit.
Hello? Hello? Okay.
Yes, you're good. Okay, so question number one, you've already answered it before, but the briefest version of what's the difference between an agent and a manager?
They both don't do anything for their clients.
Okay, so apparently Sammy has gotten really jaded over the last couple of months since we last saw him, so... Okay.
No.
I'll give you like the one sentence answer, I guess.
Go for it.
Okay, so the difference between an agent and a manager is a manager develops a client so that an agent can sign him.
And sell a script.
And sell a script. That's right. Yeah, that's an important part. And sell a script.
Yeah, kind of.
Do I need a manager or agent to succeed in this business?
9 times out of 10, yes. Nowadays, yes. For very few people, probably not.
The Aaron Sorkins of the world.
Yeah, or like just as an example, I know she's not a writer, but since she's something in the industry. Frida Pinto is a rep at CAA, and she doesn't have a manager. She just has an agent.
Right. Do I need to move to Hollywood to become a successful writer?
No, not at all. You just have to be able to fly down on short notice if you get
you
a lot of meetings.
You need to be here at 2.
Yeah.
You have to be able to fly down on short notice, or if you can't, at least buy time. So if you live really far away, if you need a few days' notice, that's fine. You need a week notice, that's fine.
So you think it's easy to make contacts here without being here?
No, it's not easy to make contacts without being here. It's definitely preferable to live here. But if you live somewhere else, especially for writers, it's fine. It's not like that for actors or for...
You know what? After they're established. I agree with you. After they're established, you can live wherever the fuck you want because you're just sending
If you're trying to get
in the business, it's going to be very difficult to email somebody from Wisconsin and say, would you read my script?
Well, you're not going to meet anybody in Wisconsin. You're not going
to you're trying to contact people.
Here's the other situation. I think if you have script that starts to get a lot of heat or whatever, then that's about the time that should give some sort of validity to you that, okay, maybe I think I can write, but now what's more important is people that actually can buy or sell the material think that I can write. So I should seriously consider taking a risk and just moving down here, because at that time you're going to start needing to create relationships.
Yeah,
whereas if you're living somewhere else and you just move down here, a leap of faith, it may work, it may backfire. So I think you should take a risk, but you should take a calculated risk.
Yeah. And, you know, and what's funny about your answer is that's pretty much verbatim what everybody said when asked this question in the webinar series. And it's always like, well, look, to be a writer, no, you don't have to be out here because you can write from anywhere. But to make contacts and get
get in the business,
yeah,
you kind of have to be out
here. Do I want to be responsible for telling you that you should pick up and move your family to Hollywood to pursue a dream of screenwriting? No. But if you get some heat, maybe you should start thinking about it. I mean, it's literally, that's...
Well, and actually, our first response to that was, you actually put it out there that you have to be here, and a woman left her family, and...
I don't know if that actually ever happened. I didn't follow up on
that. She was going to go for a six-month... She said she was going to take 6 months and try it.
Leaving her family.
Well, I mean,
but with their blessing. I mean,
yeah.
You could. I mean, I suppose you could do that. You could leave for give yourself a certain period of time and go back. I heard. I don't even know if this is true or not. I don't know if it was Jackie Chan. I'm trying to remember who it was. It's one of those stories you hear. You just can't remember who did it. It was somebody. Somebody in the industry had done this, and somebody famous. And I wish I remember who it is now. But. I know it was a guy, gave himself 3 years. And if he wasn't, it might've been Jackie Chan. I have to look into it.
3 years is a long time.
Gave himself 3 years. And if he didn't, he reached a certain milestone. It was not something like, oh, I want to be famous. It wasn't anything like that.
Rich, famous.
Then that person would move wherever they came from.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reality is.
They stayed. That's the point.
I
would probably say it was Jackie Chan.
It was?
I want to say it is too. That sounds familiar.
Because I was watching a movie the other day and he did not have a bit part in it, but he was in it and I could just see him like being the person that says, like, if you're going to do this.
Yeah.
Then you're going to, like, it's going to happen.
He didn't even speak English when he came here. No.
The reality is that you're not going to meet people.
It's hard.
You're not going to meet people that are going to want to read your script until you've built relationships. And the only way to build a relationship is to actually meet them and hang out with them. And you can't
and let them see, oh, I'm not weird. Oh, okay.
Your material is for the most part, is sold based off relationships first and then the quality second. Right. This sounds really bad. It doesn't mean that the quality is supposed to be whatever or mediocre. It just means that the relationships are more important than the actual quality. Quality comes second.
Which, because that is so funny.
Which is why you should be nitpicking over every line.
Shut up. Because you know what?
There's who shot Bobby lines. Lupo? Quick.
There's five lines in a script that might sell somebody, and you don't know which five it are.
That's true.
Because you just tried. You just had somebody who went after a script that you said was lackluster.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Just kidding. Yeah, that's true. No, that's true.
You know, I mean, that's true. I've
that
seen,
did happen.
I've seen some of the scripts that are on the blacklist or that have been tearing up the tracking boards, and I've read a couple of them, and I can't
and
get 10
go,
pages.
What?
In. They're horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
so
I mean, they're repped
it, it's
by
not actually
major
about a good. It's not
selling.
About a good script necessarily. It's about a good idea.
Yeah, that's
that
really
was,
more about the idea.
Yeah,
it's about. It's also about teaming in with the right person, because if you have a script that it might be. So a manager or an agent gets a script and they look at it and they go, okay, this is not a great script. For whatever reason, they think that their client should not do rewrites, whatever the reason is, okay? It's on a case-by-case basis. But they and they think, okay, well, I have this one person. He's going to like this exact quality of writing because you got to match it. So you take that script and you match it with whatever producer would probably like that script, even if the script is really bad by your standards. You match that person. That's what matters, because in the end, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to sell it.
Right.
So you obviously don't always know that ahead of time, but the more you sell to somebody in particular, or the more you work with somebody, the more you hang out with
them,
the more you talk to them,
for.
You know, it's a relationship. So over the long term, you get to know them.
Right.
Like
right.
any relationship, you never know somebody right up front, and that's
and,
how you end up selling
something. And I mean,
something.
You know, and it's also your... We recently read a quote where, do you remember the quote where it was like, somebody, the only time you ever sell anything is through people you know? It's never...
Oh, right, that website we're on, yeah.
It's like the best compliment is having somebody recommend that you read something.
Yes.
So it's not getting you to read my script. It's getting you to tell somebody else you should read my script.
Yes.
That's
absolutely 100% right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And
even if the script is not good, just by the fact that it got recommended by two people,
right.
the likelihood has gone super high, because
right.
people are afraid to trust their own tastes.
Right.
A lot of times. So they're afraid to trust their own taste. They'll see like two people recommend it, then maybe they know what they're talking about.
And that's sort of, I mean, that's how the industry works in terms of where you come from. I mean, you're only as good as your recommendations.
Right.
People, if you recommend too much shit in a row, then your word is no longer...
Yeah, you
no
can't
longer,
turn something over and say, this is fabulous, and this is fabulous, and this is great.
At least
is...
with that particular person or that particular producer.
Sure.
That's why if a client insists on sending something to someone, you have to be careful. Because ironically, if you do it, and you please them in that very second, the next time they write something that's actually phenomenal, and you think that particular person might like it, the person you showed them their crappy script,
right?
They're not gonna. They're gonna look. Oh, who wrote it? Joe Schmo. Oh yeah, I read his last script. Suck. Why would this be any better?
Right.
Yeah. Which is why they should, when signing with an agent manager, they should, you know, sign with somebody that they trust in the first place. If they're gonna have that sort of argument,
right.
then there's no point.
Well, and it's really, I mean, it's personality. You also, not only are you repping as a manager, not only are you repping the project, but you're also repping the writer. You have to feel confident that that person can walk into a room and not be obnoxious or weird or any of that. I mean, you're developing relationships with the writer as well.
Right.
It's not just...
And write another bad script. Gotta
right.
count on that
right.
one, too.
There's... You know, we said this a lot the last time you were here, but I mean, it's a two-way street. They're trying to get their shit sold. You're trying to sell their shit.
Yeah.
Everybody makes money.
Yeah. Everybody
that
makes
way.
Money. What was one of the other questions? The other question I think that comes up a lot is, okay, dumbest question ever, but it's the one question everybody asks. So what do you, what is your answer to the question of how do I break in?
That's what your show is for, right?
Listen to us. There you go, Sammy. Thanks. Listen to Manny and
Good
show.
Answer. Good answer.
Well, there is no one particular
that is
way
not
to break
an
in.
There is no answer to that.
There is
exactly.
any you could
there
short of
an
doing
answer.
Something illegal. I mean, there is no
barely,
particular way.
Even if
barely,
you went
even,
illegal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a hacker. Hacking is not going to get me in the business.
I think that's probably by far the most naive and dumbest question. I mean, there is no telltale sign more so than you're a newbie writer than asking, how do I break in?
I agree.
I mean, that's stupid.
Which is what this, and you're right, that's what the show is about, because everybody who's been here has a different occupation in the
There's
business.
There's never...
And they get in through whatever way they have to get in.
We've talked to a plethora of people, and nobody has the same story. Nobody has the same story.
No,
you know,
as far as how they got in the business, no.
There is a... trying to figure out how to say it. There is a webinar that I taught. Can I say this?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
There's a webinar that I taught a while ago about that, about
breaking in.
About breaking in. Basically, it was about what every single thing that you need to know, at least from my perspective, and I believe from a lot of other people's perspectives, that you need to know and you need to do before you approach an agent manager in the first place.
Well, and I think that's actually...
That helps. That's a really
good point, is that there's a lot of writers that jump to, I need a manager, I need an agent, without having done the work. I mean, they're skipping steps.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, first of all, you got to have a good script. Now, that's arbitrary, and we can argue until the cows come home what people think is good.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anybody... who's listening to the show or who goes to Pitch Fest or who is like, I have a really shitty script and you're gonna love it.
We hear that often.
Everybody has the next greatest thing in their mind, and I mean there's clearly gotta be a realization at some point, and I think the realization for the most part is you've pitched it to 20 people who are in the industry, and 20 people don't want to read it.
Right.
If you wait for 20, you're an idiot. Because if you actually go through 20 people, if one person says, I don't like it because of this, that right there should tell you, I'm going to step back, fix that.
I would say, don't just hand it to
the next person.
I would argue that point. It should at least be two. Because one person is always, it's just subjective.
I agree with you, and it also depends who those two are, what backgrounds they have.
Right. It's like if I mean, no offense to you, but if I gave you a script and you said I didn't like it, and then I gave the same script to Aaron Sorkin and he said that was great, I'd probably listen to Aaron Sorkin.
How dare you? Blasphemy! Blasphemy!
Like, fuck Sammy Montana, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
Aaron
you're
Sorkin
actually
works.
Right. Yes,
Seriously,
you're right. Especially if Aaron Sorkin wants to get involved in it somehow.
Well, yeah, but that, okay, now you're getting crazy.
No, I'm just saying.
Over the edge.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, so it's also having two different managers. I mean, it's like I met you at Pitch Fest, you've gone to Pitch Fest. You know some of our peers, quote unquote peers at Pitch Fest. You're on record. You've sold stuff. You have A-list talent as clients. It's do the background check. How your opinion might outweigh a fucktard executive at the other table because he's just there.
Or somebody who does a newsletter online or something like that.
That's true. Are you saying that it depends who...
What I'm saying
is... Yeah, so you have to take everybody's opinion. We talk about your mom said it was great.
Yeah.
But this guy says it's not.
Yeah.
Whose opinion? How do you weigh that?
Well, you also
obviously,
have to
Aaron Sorkin, really? But
well,
that's
I mean,
a little too
also,
high. But.
You also have to do that. My point being is you have to do that within the industry. Having you read a script, having another manager read a script, having a third manager read a script, who are those managers? What have they done?
Right.
How do you value their opinion based on priority?
Right.
You know, have you sold more than those other two guys? Well,
right.
Then maybe I should listen to you a little bit more. It's doing the research. It's doing the homework. It's who to listen to, who not to listen to, who to take with a grain of salt. You know, those other two guys might not have sold anything, but they might have really good ideas.
Right.
And then you listen to it, and it's like, oh, that's a really good note. I'm gonna make a change based on that. Or, you know, you come back and you say, you know, I literally can sell this if you do X, Y, and Z.
You know, what I've actually found is that I've read, I don't know how many scripts before I became a manager up until now, but I would say there are at least hundreds of scripts, at least. And I could tell you that from reading those hundreds of scripts, after, and it's not the first or the second or the third time, or I don't know what time, but I can tell you, when you've read quite a bit, I have a much stronger editor's head now that I'm able to look at something and poke holes much easier than when I read the very first script I've ever read. And I think this applies to writers. The more scripts they read, the more actually when they submit it to people to get feedback, they'll have a good idea of what feedback to take, what feedback not to take. So right. Just as an example, if you give a script to somebody and let's say you wrote the script in a linear fashion, and the person comes back and says, you know what, this should be like a parallel journey. It should be like the movie Sliding Doors or something. There should be two stories going on at the same time. Then you have to go, okay, that particular note is extremely subjective. You just have to sit back and go, if I did this in the script, will it make it that much better? The answer is no. Their note is fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but there's no need to use it. Now, if they come back and they go, look, I was reading the first 10 pages. I have no idea. What's the message in the story? What's the theme?
Right.
I don't know anything about what's going on. I know that this character is supposed to be like a good character or whatever, but I don't know. Like, I don't see what the possibility of this character changing. I don't see a theme. I don't know what the theme is in the first 10 pages.
Where are we going with that? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, where are you going with the story? Those are valid notes. Then you go back and you read it yourself and you go, okay, let me see if it's true. Let me see if I find the theme. This is after reading many scripts.
That's actually a really good point. And, you know, we've never gotten into that. So let's dive into it right now. Notes. What to listen to, what not to listen to. I think that's a really good point, though, yeah. Of like, well, we never come up with examples where, having parallel stories, that is something that person might wanted in your script.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that's something you should do versus, I don't know what the fuck's going on page 15. That's something you should listen to.
Okay, yeah, but let's even address the first one. I think that you should have it says two parallel stories, which means that the stories are, you can see that they're in conjunction with each other, but it's not being told that way.
Yeah.
It might just mean you need to change the dial. The timing needs to happen, bouncing between stories.
Yeah.
You need to look at the big picture of what that note meant.
It doesn't necessarily
I want you to write it like this.
Right. You have to also decipher the note, what the note actually means. Right.
And actually a funnier version of that same thing is the whole of, it's happened in a couple of scripts that I've read where it's the whole, I need a comment in the third act.
I need a what?
A comment. Like, there has to be a comment coming down and destroy the Earth. The ticking time.
See, that means
it's a ticking time bomb. It doesn't literally mean a comment in your, you know, Indiana Jones story.
Right.
You already got the Indiana Jones story. You don't need a comment on top of that. You just need a heightened third act.
A big thing.
And that's why when you get given the note, you ask, okay, I just want to clarify what you mean so I can know how to implement this note. Even if you're not going to implement it. So they don't think you're going to start arguing with them and then they become defensive and then they don't help you.
It should never be argument. It should be, what are you seeing through the script? What made you feel that way?
Yeah, Manny.
I mean, and people take notes literally. I need a comment in the third act.
Yes.
Okay, so now I have a romantic comedy, and I'm going to write a comment into the third act.
I have a client. He's very talented. He doesn't do that as much anymore. He knows, but I would give him notes, and literally he'd take them, and I would look at it. I'll be like, holy shit.
You literally did.
So I'll go back. I'll be like, dude, that's the first example I could think of when I gave you that note. What do you want me to do? I didn't mean put that in. Well, you told me, well, you have to be specific. I'm not the writer. I'm telling you what I think the problem is.
I give Manny
maybe if we talk,
like
we can figure out how to resolve it.
Okay. See you, baby.
You know, just call.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Take care. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Oh, you too.
Bye, Neil. Thank
you. See you, Manny.
Walk safe.
Don't go to Alaska.
Oh, I know.
I write notes from Manny. Like, I hate this line. just, I hate this line. And he's like, that's real helpful. And I'm like, I didn't know how else to fix it. I just know it's broken. I'm telling you it's the wrong line. We'll come up with another line, but I'm just saying, I hate this line.
Right.
It sounds stupid. And he says, that's not constructive criticism. Well, you're the writer.
Well,
it's your script,
I mean,
and I'm saying this line is stupid.
That's why I would suggest when you get like a general note is to clarify what that general note means, because if somebody tells you something to you, it might mean something else, especially if it's a general note. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate this line.
I hate this character.
What is the subtext of that? I hate this line. What? Because I have issues. I was beaten by bullying as a kid, and that line. Well, that's not your problem.
Right.
But why? Like, you hate this line because it doesn't make sense that the character's saying it? Now you're getting somewhere. Why doesn't it make sense? And then you dig the part about why doesn't it make sense. You kind of dig in is your job. But I'm just saying, like, at least you've gotten something.
Well, you're right. Now I rewrite it. Now I just say this should
Cheryl.
Be the line. How about this? This should be the line. Can we say that instead?
But I mean, that's actually just just to sort of go back over the notes thing, where it is it's a game of having to decipher and figure out what the problem is. And I think that a lot of people, you know, Cheryl and I have run into situations where whole characters were not liked just based on the character description. We didn't know that at the time, but like, there was one character in a script where we didn't change a single fucking word of dialogue. Nothing. We just changed the character description.
Took out big boobs or something.
And the producer came back and goes, I really love what you did with so-and-so. She's such a better character now. It was just whatever set him off in that character, that original character description that we wrote, he hated that character. And so his note was, I really don't like so-and-so.
But so then you need to make him like her. Need to change to make him like the character?
Yeah, good point.
And that's all we did was change character description.
Sometimes it's something as little as that.
Even
if the note sounds big.
The character description was really fucking stupid.
I will admit. It was totally retarded.
Yeah. You get a note like that and you're like, fuck.
I gotta
rewrite the whole script. No, it might literally just be she just said something stupid that I didn't like.
Right, exactly.
And I want to, common mistake here, and you probably run across this all the time.
Yeah.
Keeping your characters consistent. If the person is a bitch in the beginning the guy's very strong in the beginning and then he's crying somewhere, I don't even understand this character now. Is he strong or is he crying? Pick one. If the woman is a strong woman, she shouldn't be asking for directions on page 30.
Right.
I think consistency is a big part of why.
Unless you build up to a specific change of emotion.
Yes.
So, for example, if a person doesn't normally cry, if you're going to show them crying later on, it means there's a character arc. It means the character.
There better be a child dead somewhere.
Yes.
That's
so,
what I'm saying.
So you build it up slowly. So, like, you see him one time, he's getting there, and then he stops himself. He's not going to cry. You could tell in his face and his action. Then you're building it up. So by the time you get to that point, it makes sense because you remember, oh, yeah, these other times.
There was that other point.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's set up and payoff.
I'm just saying, you're a strong character or you're not a strong character or you're a leech or you're not a leech.
Yeah.
Just keep it the same.
Consistent,
all the way through.
That's what
characters start to blend together when they're all you.
Yeah.
They're all the writer writes what he knows, so he makes all his characters him, or somebody he knows, or a friend, or just keep it consistent. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. I have a huge problem with that, I will freely admit.
Hence why I mentioned it.
Yes. moving off of that, to the other popular question, you know, the how do I break in, which did we actually address
we said
that?
No. We said no. there is no answer.
I
think the other thing that kind of pops up the most frequent is, which kind of comes off of the notes thing, is when do you know a script is done? I mean, we are in the, and to sort of just tell a brief anecdote, we're in the process of, again, nitpicking over line by line and putting a script down and doing a rewrite. At what point should a writer be like, this is done, I should probably send it out now?
And oh, that definition of done.
I can guarantee you, it's not after the first draft.
Ever.
Although there are writers that write a good first draft, but not one that you send out. That never happens.
Probably. I found that we've got into a very healthy area where our first draft is a good draft.
Outline.
But it's shit.
It's an outline. It's basically
our
an outline.
Our second draft is golden.
Right.
It used to be five. It used to be five. We've gotten it down to two. First draft is an outline. It gives you an idea of what we're trying to do.
Yeah. We're trying to get to.
And then the second one's going to be like, oh, this is what I wanted the first time.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what was the question?
When is the script...
Oh, yeah. When
is
it done?
The script is done.
It's done. And the definition of done that you just said was when you feel like it's ready to go out. Right?
Yeah. Okay. So...
at least two drafts.
If
the rule
the
is
the first draft, I'm going to give it to Cheryl. She's going to read it first. But it's that when is it done to the point of where I should be giving it to somebody in the industry and feeling confident?
Yeah, here you go, Sammy. Go.
It's
go,
not crap.
It.
No. Not even that. It's not crap. I'm not going to give you something that's going to embarrass me and be like, oh, you know what? I read it, and you're a fucktard. I don't even know why you're trying to be in this business. So it's like it's having a script get to a point where it's like respectable. I don't even know.
I don't know. I don't think that's measurable. That's not mathematical.
I mean, we've seen so many scripts in Pitch Fest where it's like five pages and we're out. Like and. There's a couple of scripts where you and I have read the same script and I gave it to 10 and I remember you distinctly saying like you're better than I was. I gave up at 5.
Oh yeah, I do remember. That's right. I blocked it out. It's very traumatic for me to read those 5. But
we'll think about reading 10.
I can imagine. Are you still seeing your therapist? No. Here's when I think it's not done, but ready to show people and not to get feedback, hopefully to sell it, is when you've written a few times, when you've written it at least once or twice, or let me rephrase that, one or two drafts, and you feel like you don't have any more to say, any more to fix in it. And now you need somebody who's objective, or you've stopped being objective for a little bit. You can't be objective anymore. You get the feedback, then you take the notes, analyze them, then you get another feedback, take the notes, analyze. As the notes become less and less from the people that are giving you the feedback,
good
you realize
point.
That it's probably ready. But like Cheryl said, it's not measurable, but I'm just saying the probability of it being ready is higher. And since there's no way to measure it, that's the best way to measure it.
Yeah.
And then you take your chances and send it out.
If the best note they can give you is a typo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're good.
I think you're good.
When you're done, when you're down to just typos,
yeah.
I think that's a pretty good sign that, you know, your note on our last script was in not verbatim, but it was basically like the third act was confusing to you.
Yeah.
Third
I remember.
Problems.
Yeah.
So that's that. Okay. Well, we have to address that. And
that's an okay note to give somebody like us. It's an okay note because
we
can deal with that.
If we understand that there's third act problems, then we then realize that, okay, there's two ways to tackle this. One, we can take Sammy's note that there's a third act problem, and you were more specific than that, but we can fix those couple of things and make it clearer for you, and boom, be done. Or, as professionals, we can say, well, part of the third act problem is all of these other problems that are throughout the script, so...
But they come to a big head at the third act.
So let's go back and fix it forward.
From the beginning, yeah.
Because we know we're going to have to do it eventually anyway.
Right.
If somebody says you have a third act issue, you got issues.
It's not always about the third act. It's about the script as whole.
I agree.
Right,
all your comments are a character of this. They're all of your notes that have been given to you ever mm-hmm. are all the same exact thing. They're all, I don't like this character, or I don't understand what this character's doing, or where is this character?
Right.
It's to this. Your action gets the least amount of comments. Everybody says, for the most part, that's a great action scene. Love that sure. action scene. But it's so your notes are very consistent, so it's right. easy for you to pick right. up what because fits.
Right, exactly.
And every writer should pick that out. Every writer should pay attention. If I get notes on my characters every fucking time I give somebody a script,
then you got problems writing characters.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, going back to the notes thing, that's also, you know, what I used to do is if somebody has a problem with page 60, an event that happened on page 60, and the other person said that they loved page 60, well, then you don't have any problems with 60. Leave it alone. But if somebody comes back and says, I have a problem with Sally as a character, and three other people say, yeah, I didn't really like Sally, or said something about Sally, well, then that's clearly a problem.
Yeah.
And you have to address
that. Yeah. Yeah.
But when you have people that are like, oh, you know, I really hated Sally. Oh, no, I really love Sally. Well, then you know what?
It's just personality.
Yeah, it's subjective and yeah. it's a crapshoot. So just wash your hands of it, and Sally's just fine.
Right. Yeah. Look, I can tell you that to illustrate an example. One of my clients wrote an action sci-fi thriller, and the we went through. I don't know how many drafts he went through on his own. Probably two or three, knowing mm-hmm. him. And then with me, we went through about three.
Okay.
And then he entered it in a competition, and it won. It wasn't one of the major competitions, but it was more... He entered a competition just to see what other people think of it. And then it won. After the competition, I sent it to... I decided to test it out. Only in one company. And see what they responded to. It didn't happen. Now, even though that was one negative response, I decided that that response was accurate. So I went back to the drawing board. I talked to him about it. Even though we barely got any notes, we realized that there's something that needs to make this different. So we went back. He came up with better ideas. It was except for the characters and the setting. Everything else, including like the look of the film, like the set design, if you will, everything else, and basic elements of the story, everything else changed. So it was technically a page one rewrite. We went through close to seven or eight drafts. Finally, we decided instead of sending it to a producer that I want to try and sell it to, we'd get coverage.
Okay.
From one of the coverage services. Okay. Somebody who doesn't know us, has no, sure, you sure. know. So, and it was a reliable coverage service, in my opinion. So he sent it out to that coverage service. He got coverage on it, came back. It wasn't any detailed notes. The coverage was extremely helpful. We looked at the coverage and realized that there were particular things in there that we could still work. So we're like, okay, good. We'll rework those things. We reworked those things because they got to consider, not a recommend. It was a consider with reservations. We went back, reworked those things. So total out of everything, it's been through more than 10 drafts. And now he's on his last draft because, and I know it's the last draft because the notes I gave him are like, fix this typo here, just
right.
cut this act. Just, can you shorten it a little bit? You know, don't cut anything unless you run it by me. If you're not 100% sure, I don't want you to cut anything important. It was that kind of a
that's
note.
Good.
And that was it. And that was an act
okay,
one note.
So that
was it.
That kind of,
and now we know, now we're at least comfortable to send it out. If they pass on whatever, they pass on, but we at least know that the quality of it is really good. We're comparing it to.
Although I would never pay for coverage service, sir.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, sure. I could.
Shame on you.
Look, I think whoever does the coverage, as long as it's a reliable person, that's what matters. I can't send a script.
It's a person who's in college for writing and that's doing
yeah.
the coverage.
Hold on a second. I sent it to somebody.
you should have my mine then too. You want notes?
You want me to send you something?
Well, yes.
I want to send you something.
All right. Okay.
As opposed to telling your clients,
well, you want to hear
coverage.
It.
Come on.
Well, you guys have your own stuff you're working on.
No,
so.
No.
If you can hear the same thing that I say to Manny about his scripts, then I'll respond to it.
Okay. Okay. Then I'll take you up on that. You're gonna regret that.
No, you're gonna regret
it.
This line is stupid.
Hollywood.
This line is stupid.
Yeah. No, like the person we sent the company that we sent the coverage to are reliable in my opinion. I don't make it a habit, and I don't trust most coverage services.
As you shouldn't.
Right. But this coverage, I know somebody else has used it, and I've seen what they do, and I know it's very reliable. So before he even sent it, when he was asking me, like, who should we send it to, I said, we might want to try this company because I know I trust their coverage service. And he came back, and sure enough, the notes were extremely helpful. And now, and I think that...
That's a crapshoot. You happen to get a good intern that day.
That is a crapshoot, and I will definitely go back to that particular person, that particular reader.
Yeah,
but and there's other readers in the industry, like people that you know and stuff. But again, if I want to sell it to those people that I know that work at those particular companies, I don't want to send it to those companies.
Sure.
I don't want them to get a bad impression and shoot myself in the foot.
Yeah, you got
to
wait until it's the best possible version.
Right.
I mean,
do you have time to read a second draft and a third draft? Nobody does.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Sending it to people like us, though, that's like incognito. You can take or leave any of those. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
It's not a must. You didn't pay for it. It's free.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I guess we haven't really come to an agreement per se, but I'm just trying to sum up this answer of like, a script is ready when.
That's such a bad.
I mean, it's arbitrary, right?
The script is ready when.
How do you break in? It's the same question.
Yeah,
the script is ready when when you're getting the least amount of notes, and the notes aren't helping to make the script any better anymore.
I think
as long as they're not for your mom.
Yeah,
the one thing that I think we can all agree on. And this is going out towards to most of our listeners, is that although the answer varies, the one true answer is it's not after a first draft.
Yes.
It's not after a first draft. I think we can all agree.
It's after several drafts, that's for
yeah.
sure.
Yes.
Several. And that's a vague thing, but it is several. It could be 10, it could be 15.
Yeah,
and sometimes something doesn't work. You got to just put it away and work on something else.
Yeah. Oh,
even our second drafts aren't really second drafts.
Really?
They're more like three or four.
Oh, okay.
Because we just go back and forth.
It's just too detailed. It's so detailed draft. The next draft is like almost a new script.
Yeah, I mean we've been fortunate enough to be in a position where we've never truly done a page one rewrite. I think we came pretty close with our Tarzan project. I think that was pretty close to page one rewrite. But the main scope or idea that we've always had, that has always stayed. It's never been, oh shit,
yeah,
we gotta rethink
stupid.
This.
Yeah. You can't go on the White House? What are you talking about? No, forget mm-hmm. that. Take the White House out.
I mean, there have
That's been, the whole movie!
there have been scripts where I've gone off on my own and I've written 30 or 60 pages and given it to Cheryl and she's like, well, here's 18 problems that I see with this. And it's like, I understand. And granted, I've never been that easygoing right off the bat. But I eventually
never said I understand.
But eventually I get there. And those scripts sort of get pocketed away.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a script that I was writing recently where I was on page 60 something before I even let her read anything, which was stupid because as soon as she goes, okay, well, the female character's got problems with this, and the bad guy's got problems with this, and this, and there was good stuff there. It's just that the storyline
low start from page one.
The storyline wasn't solidified.
Yeah.
To the point of where, because I in all honesty, I don't outline, I don't do treatments.
Well, every writer works differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing we've heard over and over. People do things very, very differently.
Right. And I think that the scripts where I get to page 60 and it kind of falls by the wayside, it's because I don't do that. But the amount of time I spent getting to page 60 is probably about the amount of time I would have spent outlining. So I, you know,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, I just, but if I get to page 60 and I have gold, but guess what? I didn't have to outline. I just,
yeah,
just
yeah.
finished the last 30 pages and
right.
I'm gold.
kind of funny thing, you totally cut this, by the way. This is just a Manny side note. Manny has this paranoia of page limit. He's very set on a script and needs to be as many pages. So we're rewriting, and I'm cutting like shit ton of stuff. I'm like, whole sessions just gone. But he, before he gave it to me, he went, I'm at 110, I have to go cut stuff. Before I finish the story, I'm gonna go cut stuff. He hasn't finished the script yet. He's already cutting stuff to make it under, it needs to be 90 to 110. He's so paranoid about the page count. I'm like, just fucking write the story. I'm gonna cut many, many pages. It will be cut later. Just write the whole story.
Do you?
He stops in the middle to go cut shit.
You know, there are actually writers that it's weird. There's, and I don't know if anybody in my clients does this or not, but there are writers that actually edit as they go along. They literally get to like page 20 or something, like go back, rewrite. They rewrite as they go. It's weird,
that's
I know,
crazy.
But I've heard of professionals doing it.
I
guess. I mean,
I get the whole thing because you end up with the scene you just cut.
I know.
I'd rather
a writer do that, but I've also heard that professionals do it. These are guys working in the industry that rewrite as they go.
I mean, I realize that's easier to imagine, only because I recognize the fact that the first time I try to say something is not always the best way. And just through the experience of going through line by line right now with Cheryl on this latest script, it's very easy. The first draft is to convey an idea. It's just trying to get the images in my head down on paper. The second draft is saying it better. And I can always say it better.
Yes.
So writing 20 pages and then waking up the next day, rewriting those 20 pages to write the next 10 makes sense, because those 20 pages aren't going to be great. They're just laying down the foundation. It's okay, this I can say what I said in three sentences in one if I just reworded it differently.
Right.
But my mind wasn't in that
right
mindset when I was writing.
You weren't editing.
Right.
Right.
I was just trying to get the images on paper.
Right.
You're puking it on a page.
Vomit draft. It's a vomit draft. Just get it down.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Right. So I can understand editing as you go, because you can just read. If you're just fixing the vomit, then there's always a way to.
Yeah, you have a thing about how many pages it is. You see 114 and you're freaking out.
Well, yeah, but okay. In my defense, the scene was getting long.
And we cut out three pages after that. So I understand, but that you can't let a page number drive what you're writing. That's insane.
No, but let's you're absolutely correct.
You go back
and edit
it,
you're absolutely correct.
Cut it down to 90 pages.
You're
that's
absolutely
fine.
Correct, but let's agree on the fact that after you've written the draft, it still can't be 127.
Your final draft.
That's not funny.
Violet. Your final draft.
By the way, you're listening to the John Ken Show.
Your final draft will be 90 to 110 pages. Figure out what to cut. What doesn't need to be there.
Sure.
But don't let go. Just don't stop writing because I got to go back and make it under 110 now, and then I'll keep writing. Oh no, and now it's over 100.
Okay, that happened once on one script.
Whatever. Okay.
Go
with one script.
And it truly did.
Yeah, we've had this conversation like.
Yeah.
Fuck the pages. Worry about that later. Yes, you cut it down to 110 where it's gotta be. But don't stop writing based on my page.
Do you go by page count?
Everyone does.
Do you get a script from a client and is your first inclination to flip and see how many pages it is?
130 pages.
Just so I know, yeah, because
the first thing you do.
Right.
It's the first thing everybody does.
Right.
How long is this going to be?
Right.
But you wouldn't give it to Sammy at 130 pages.
No, I understand that. Well, I'm just saying, number one, that's the first thing.
Oh, cool. I agree.
And then do you have clients that have given you 127, 130?
The most I've gotten, I believe, off the top of my head, is 137.
Okay.
And then it got cut down to, I might not remember correctly, but maybe it was like 120 something, 125 maybe. But it was a. First of all, it was a historical period thriller. There's a whole thing behind it. Okay, it wasn't
a
modern story.
Not a script.
Yeah, it was a historical period thriller, and it was a tight. You don't feel there, but that's. I shouldn't even be saying this because that's the contrary to what.
Well, look. I mean,
I personally would rather he go and cut more if I saw that there needs to be more needs to be cut. But if I'm reading it and I don't feel like it's that amount,
that's the answer.
Yeah.
The answer is page count really doesn't matter as long as you're invested in the story.
To a certain extent. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
Schindler's List is a 3-hour movie, and it was like a 120-page script. So, I mean, numbers are sort of arbitrary.
Yeah, when your eyes start scanning over large amounts of writing in a script.
Yeah.
When you start skimming,
it's too long. You're literally going, oh, they said that?
Or,
involved,
I mean, Tarantino scripts are like 140, 170.
And we're page turners. They're written like a novel, too. That's the worst part. They're so hard to read. But good reading. You don't miss a lot. You don't scan.
Right.
Like, when I read one of many scripts that he sent me, I remember it was the writing was good, but it was also lean. That I got through it really quickly. I don't even know how long it was. I really don't know how long
it was. It's an easy read, though.
But it was an easy read. So if it feels like that, if there's... Because you could write... You could have a script that's 125 pages, but the scenes are lean. And the reason it's 125 pages is because it's
spaces.
Really broken up.
Yeah.
Or there's spaces or there's more scenes... And that's why. So it's more the pacing of the scene that adds to the overall pacing of the script.
When we finished Run, it was
that's the one I was talking about.
It was like 124 pages, and we cut it down to 112 just by not making it lean, not even deleting anything. It was just my style of writing is one-liners, one line, and then he does this. And then he does this, new line,
dialogue.
And running, and then dialogue, and
right.
Then running. And he turns, and kaboom, and this. And taking all of that and turning it into a paragraph, rather than three separate lines, we cut 10 pages out without even deleting a single word. So...
Huh. Was that the draft I read? Do you know?
No, you haven't read, because the other thing about Run is we made it linear.
Okay. Cool.
Which fixes actually a couple of things, a couple of your notes where you didn't like, because you didn't, the main character, no, the main character wasn't likable. That was his big note.
That's his thing, characters. You can't keep the character, he knows what it is in his head, the character should be, but it doesn't come out, nobody else gets that. It's like you already assume that everybody should know what your character is.
That's probably true. I would agree with that.
I've found, I don't know, and just stop me if I'm going on a side note, but I found that with writers, some writers write by themselves and they have certain weaknesses and they write and they get better. Let's say they have, you know, characterization
problems. That's consistent in their scripts. And then some writers have those problems and they bring another writer to the table. Another writer has a different set of problems. So they help solve each other's problems. So they complement each other. It becomes a good team. And sometimes it becomes a toxic team. Like I had a client who wrote a script a long time ago. The script was the idea was amazing. The script was just good. And they wrote it together. So I would ask, I remember when I rep both, now I rep one of them, but I remember that time when I rep both of them, I'd go back and go, okay, when I give them notes, they rework it. I'm like, okay, who wrote this part? I'm just curious.
Because opposite.
Yeah, because I'm trying to learn like what strengths you guys are. Yeah.
Right. Who's doing what?
And they'd say, oh, we both agreed on it. Always, right? They're always a team because they probably talked before the conversation on the phone to say that we both agree on this. We don't need to say who wrote what. Okay, let's talk to Sam. And they get on the phone. And I figured that out later on. I was right because when I started repping only one of them, he writes really, really freaking good by himself. And now I realized certain things that they quote unquote fixed in an old script that they co-wrote together were the other writer's notes, that the other writer has a strong personality. He's a good guy, but he has a strong personality. Right. And then my client is like a nice guy. Like, yeah, let's, you know, I want to incorporate your notes into it. So I realized that it shouldn't be writing together because they write two different kinds of films.
And they can't argue. They can't debate. If you can't debate out.
And they can't debate, yeah.
If you can't debate it out and say why one works better. Can't just accept it.
I remember the first time I read when my client wrote the first thing on his own without a co-writer, I thought, holy shit. I even called him up and I said, did you really write this yourself? Or was somebody writing for you and you're just taking credit? He's like, no, I wrote it. I'm like, why did you not starting writing yourself before?
Right.
Did you like dive yourself? He's like, well, I thought we brought different strengths. I'm like, no. You write different movies. You don't bring different strengths. That's why nothing happened with that other script. So anyway, so my point being is some writers should co-write and some writers shouldn't. I'm not sure what that has to do with anything. But
we will not be doing that because I will totally say, that's my line. Yeah. You say, oh, that's a great line. Mine. We will do that. And he'll take credit for his shit.
Oh, fuck yeah, I will. All right. I think on that note, we should watch some Steven Seagal. We need to solve the question of who shot Bobby Lupo.
Bobby Lupo.
Well, I actually do an intro because I want to tell the story of why we're watching Alfred Justice with you. Because it was all based on brunch last time. But anyway, so hey, episode 50. We did it.
We did.
We haven't killed each other yet.
Can't believe you guys have done 50 episodes.
I know.
It's nuts.
Two more weeks, that's one cool. year anniversary. Nobody does a 52. It's 1 year, but it's episode 52.
Hey, that's what we do on for a series of TV series. 100th episode. Yeah, but it took you like 9 years to get there.
So when you do 50 more, wait, in how many years? In a year? Did you just say a year?
52. Yeah, because we.
I just realized you just said a year.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's been almost 8 months since you've been on the show last. I mean, you.
So
were,
if you do 50 every year. It's a lot of episodes.
Nerdist does.
So by the time you're 70,
Nerdist and Marin do like 2 weeks.
Who?
Fuck.
Nerdist and Marin.
Yeah,
Mark
that's
Maron.
Like a full time job for them.
Who's
like
that?
One of their jobs.
Mark Maron.
No.
Sad face.
Who's that?
He's.
And the Nerdist podcast is Chris Hardwick's Talking Dead.
Oh yeah.
Mark Maron is a comedian who's a very solemn comedian, and.
He does like 2 weeks. He just hit like his 400th show. Nerdist just did 300.
He's like so depressing. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know?
But 300 episodes in like 3 years. That's, yeah. I mean, that's two a week. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a full-time job for us.
That's still really good. I know it's not a little bit, it's a lot of episodes.
We struggle. We struggle. If we don't have a guest, it's like literally... We spend half the day. Okay, so what are we talking about? What are we talking about? Well, I thought it'd be really good if we talked. Yeah, that's gonna take like 5 minutes to talk.
There's
about.
5 minutes.
Yeah. What's the average length of each show?
If it's just me and her, anywhere between 25 and 30 minutes.
Okay,
that's good. If it's with a guest, it's anywhere between an hour to
three.
Yeah, well,
Deborah's.
Yeah, but you cut it down, right?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
What?
So you keep it that length? I thought you might, maybe you cut it down to.
Okay. We're at 58 minutes right now.
Are we?
We're not going to cut any of
this. If we decide that the only time we go back now and edit, we've actually stopped editing for the most part altogether.
Yeah.
Is if when somebody else wants something cut. If you want something cut out of.
There's been a couple of times when, like, we had a friend who was working for Bad Robot.
Yeah.
And we started getting into a very weird Star Wars realm.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And there was,
we should have been talking.
There was things.
Out,
there was things he told
us
at brunch that we couldn't talk about on the show. So afterwards, he was like, "You got to cut that part." Like, done. I got it.
So, but when shit like that happens.
Okay, no, I got it. That makes sense.
I mean, if you want to go on a Paula Deen racist tirade, and then be like, "Oh, can you please cut
that
out?"
I think I said the word "fuck" and it upsets me. So take that out.
But, yeah, I mean, for the most part, I think the only times we ever edit at this point is if we're in a week where we're super struggling and we're literally just rambling to get our minute count up.
we're recording.
We've done a couple of 15-minute shows.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we got nothing.
It's a holiday, people.
Yeah, it's
sometimes
been a couple
it's
of
been
holidays.
That's actually kind of good that you vary it.
Yeah,
that's actually good.
But the most consistent thing is we have to do it every week, however long.
That's good.
We don't miss that. We have not missed a.
Well, you know what you could do? If you do 15 minutes and you need to get to what, an hour? 45 minutes of commercials. And here's a word from our sponsors.
Yeah.
Do you have erectile dysfunction? Well, now you can solve that problem with the blue pill.
We need some porno to, like, back us.
Yeah. Adam and Eve sponsor a ton of podcasts.
Yes. They do? Yeah. Of your podcast?
Yeah. No, not of our podcast.
We should.
We don't make money.
Netflix? Seriously, you could.
Hulu Plus.
Which we live
Stamps.com.
on, by the way.
Ah, those are not bad ideas.
We had a manager that knew what to do.
You know what? We actually just had a manager ask who are our sponsors, and they said, "Would you mind if I talked to Chris Hardwick about your podcast?" And
that's cool.
No, we don't really want you to.
No. We're like, why haven't you talked about it before? All right, so thank you so much for doing the show.
Sure, no problem.
And we're going to jump right into a special edition with you. But for this week, episode 50, people, I'm Manny from Sammy. Thanks for being here. Cheryl, till next week.
Wow, you said my name for me? Is that what you
do? I always do.
You do not? You said, I'm Manny. Cheryl, thank you.
Till next week.
Peace out.
Thank you. I'll get the final word on this one. Got lost in the game.